Let's talk tech.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Let's Talk Tech. We hope you're enjoying season two so far. And up today, we have a very exciting guest for you, Michael. We have a very exciting guest for you who I will let introduce himself, but he's going to be telling you all about his journey in tech so far and what he's currently doing. As you know, season two, we are doing Day in the Life. So we will talk to him about a day in his life and his previous lives and everything he's gotten up to. So yeah, welcome aboard to episode, I always lose count of the episodes, episode four, I believe.
Four.
If we include the intro, I'm your host, Temi, and my lovely co-host. I love the full name. I think that's the first time you guys have heard the full name.
I mean, I think we're close right now.
We're getting warm. I like it. We're getting warmer. We're getting more acquainted with ourselves. Love it. And today we also have the lovely Michael with us. Hi, Michael. How are you doing?
Hey, guys. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah.
Lovely day. Lovely cold winter day. All right. But all good. Michael, please tell us about yourself.
I always thought I would know how to answer the question after a lot of times.
You made me answer that question, so I hope you're ready.
It's basic about me. My name is Michael Shobuale. I am software engineer, and I like to write software. I also do that's from web applications to back end software, to also like mobile applications as well. I do some podcasting as well on the side. So I love to talk. So that's basically me.
We got you on the right platform then. Check out his podcast, Convo with Friends. You might hear a familiar voice on one of the episodes, but it's a really cool podcast. I enjoy it a lot.
Thanks for the plug.
No worries. Free advertising here for now. Free for now. So get it in whilst you can.
Yeah. We need to pay the bills, Timmy.
I said for now. Yeah. That leads me nicely to my next question, actually. And you said you're a software engineer. And Oyin and I were actually discussing. We've discussed this several times, and we're no closer to the answer, actually. You identified yourself as a software engineer. How does that differ, or does it differ, to a software developer?
That's actually a good one, because in my company, I'm considered a software developer.
But you don't like that. You want to be...
I prefer to tag myself a software engineer. I'm actually like software developer and software engineer. I think it's just terminology, basically. Interesting. Terminology. You can choose whatever one. Because I think engineering has to do with basically the same thing, but maybe engineering, perhaps, estimation of software, how long it takes to build, how do we optimize the software and everything, beginning to the end. Developer is still the same thing. I don't see a difference. It's just terminology. Maybe developer thinks about the code only, and engineer thinks about the whole, process,
like more of the end-to-end
everything. Maybe that's what it means. I don't know.
So what I'm getting from that is you want people to know I'm that guy, I do the whole end-to-end, don't confine me to just to just the code.
Exactly, basically. Cool. That's it.
It's really interesting, which I think is quite similar sometimes to some tech roles that attach engineer to some of their job description. So I've heard of roles like UX engineer, and they sometimes kind of think of it as someone who does like everything within like the product development process. I think that makes a lot of sense.
And besides, software engineering is very like it's very broad, it's a very wide aspect, and you can get roles in software engineering as a discipline, or what they call it. So you can also be the one who thinks about the product you can be the one who, you know, makes sure the product, maybe like support or something, you know, like you have to approximate how long the product will take to achievement, or, you know, like sprint planning and all those, you know, things that go on in software engineering as a whole. So I think in a software engineering team, you could have, you know, lead software engineers, you could have just developers, which are the guys that just, you know, write the code for that, or support. You could have people who are doing like operations or systems, who are the guys that like, you know, make the code live on the servers and everything. And then you can also have a mixture of both, like a DevOps, that's people who, you know, work as developers and also as operations, you know, in that kind of way. So in a software engineering team, you actually have like a mixture of all of those. I consider myself an engineer because I could easily play into any of those roles depending on the situation. Yeah.
That's really good insight. I'm smiling because I'm very intrigued to see. So there's going to be two parts to the software engineer / developer saga. I'm very interested to see what the second part has to say. And I think it'll be quite interesting to see the different perspectives on what the difference is. Okay. No, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And even when you just like think about engineering from like the traditional sense of it, who an engineer is, like a civil engineer or an electrical engineer or some person is just like thinking about the entire system, just like how does this entire system, you know, how does everything work together, how can we optimize and make sure that we're accomplishing what we need to. So I think, yeah, definitely makes a lot
and
of sense.
think of it like a mechanic and an engineer, you know, just piggybacking off your engineering, like a mechanic and a mechanical engineer, like they both work on the same product, which is the car. You know, just someone gets mostly hands-on and someone thinks about the whole project of the whole, but it doesn't mean a mechanical engineer cannot actually get hands-on, you know, and it doesn't mean that way. It doesn't mean the mechanical engineer or the mechanic, as we term it, can't think about the whole car, you know, as a whole. Yeah. So yeah, it's like that. Basically, roles that you just go into. Yeah.
Cool. So Michael, how did you get into software engineering?
Yeah, my journey is pretty basic, and So I was trying to go into uni to study software engineering, and then I spoke to my brother, and then, you know, he told me what do I want to study. I said, you know, software engineering, and then he was like, no, what exactly do you want to do? So then then we will choose like the course that will suit you. So I told him, you know, I want to make websites, and websites, that was what I said then, and, you know, write software, I don't want to touch hardware. And then he was like, okay, based on what you described, you are describing information technology, like IT, because IT basically focuses on webs, web design, human interaction, you know, all those things. And then software engineering focuses more on, you know, lots of mathematics and, you know, lots of calculations. And they teach you programming, but they don't teach you, you know, the website aspect of it. So, you know, okay, so I went to do IT. I did IT for about four to five years, depending on on what happened. So I did IT, and then
what happened? We want to know.
Well, during my time in uni, you know, ran into some issues, so I couldn't go to school for like a year. So that was what happened. Okay. You know, like a break in between, and then I got back into. So it was four. It's a 4-year course. That's not that the 4-year course. Okay. And then in IT, they teach software engineering as just one course. So in IT is basically, but IT is not a guarantee that you become a software engineer.
No.
It's a very, like they teach you everything.
Yeah, it must be super broad because IT like means like that's all of information technology, right? So yeah. Very broad.
You get to do everything from, they teach you basically about the hardware, they teach you basics about server, the basic about database, little things about user human computer interaction, little things about software engineering. They teach you a little of everything.
So you touch a bit on like everything.
And even that security and cloud computing, you just touch on everything. And that's how
I got similar. That's very similar to a course, to the course I did in my undergrad as well.
What course was that?
ICT. It was the school had it as information and communication science. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just tell people I studied ICT. But yeah, it was more of that, like studying every single thing, and you have modules in parts of the tech ecosystem. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, so that was how I did it. I mean, after 4 years, I got a job. After like straight out of uni, I got a job to work as a dev, as a developer. Yeah. So, but before then, I was doing some personal projects, basically for just learning purposes. It don't really matter. I did some webs like WordPress websites, on the side, and all that. Then I started to work as a developer. Yeah. So that was how I got into working software as a software engineer. Right?
How did you go from doing an IT undergrad to knowing enough or having enough skills to get a developer job? Because you just told us you touched on it. So did you spend more time on it, or how did that come about?
Okay, so the way IT works is that after 2 years of uni, you have the last 2 years to specialize, to choose what you want to do with IT. So usually the first 2 years are usually like a little everything, but the last 2 years are the most confusing years for most IT students, because they're just like, okay, now I have all this information, what can I do? So what happened for me then was that I knew I wanted to make websites, so I started to look into I think this there was a framework, we had a project, and I decided to use a framework instead, Laravel. It was PHP. And once I did that, I think there was a pandemic or something. So, yeah.
Why you say that so casually?
it was like 2020. That was my last year.
Mm.
So my last year of uni, we had the final school year project and all that. And I think that was when, I also had my brother. My brother is very key in my journey. So I had him tell me to, I should look into, front end stuff. There's Vue, there's Vue.js, there's React.
Wait, sorry.
Angular.
Sorry, yeah. Let's talk tech. We talk very simply. What's front end?
Okay, so he asked me to look into there's some frameworks, which is like a skeleton of how to build a website. So front end is basically what you see happening when you visit a website.
Okay.
So yeah, he told me to look into those kind of things and those kind of technologies. And yeah, I looked into them and I was just, learning.
Sorry, is your brother a software developer as well?
No, Sam is...
Sam is a technologist.
Yeah, he's a little bit of everything too.
Yeah, he's... Right now, he's in cloud.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, so he was just like, as a guide, guiding me down a path because he's basically like, what do you want to do? This is the path to follow kind of thing. So yeah, I did spend some time with that. Honestly, when I went for my interview, I didn't feel I was ready. I was like, okay, yeah, this is what I can do. And then they were like, wow, like usually people that come out from uni, they don't know how to do up to this. Like I knew I wasn't the best at what I was doing, but just for the very fact that I took an extra effort to learn a framework or the latest technology, and all that, that was just it for me. So
I love the fact that you said that, honestly, because I think sometimes, especially with like tech, where it can seem like there's so much to learn about different things, like whichever domain you pick, there's so much to learn. And I think sometimes people think they need to be experts before they can go into it. So I really like the fact that you said that they really like the fact that you had experimented, you explored, you tried different things, and that was enough.
Yeah. And one thing as well was just like doing school projects, school assignments and all that. You know, they're all also important, you know, in how I was able to, you know, do that. Because being able to combine all of those, it did help me, because some of the interview questions, and honestly, I didn't prepare for the interview. But most of the interview questions had to be things I had already done before.
That I do not recommend.
Don't do that, please, guys.
Don't try that. Oh, I don't
try
kids.
This at home. It seems like, to be honest, I feel like you probably got away with that, because just from what you're saying, it seems that you held on to this dream so strongly of like, I want to learn how to make websites. And I think you had such a passion that probably just came through in your interview. So they were probably blown away by that alone, to be
yeah,
honest.
Yeah, obviously, because I mean, if when I see some of the interview questions, you know, you go HackerRank, or I can't remember, there's some sites, LeetCode, like there's some sites that people usually use to train for interview questions, LeetCode, HackerRank, and some other, you know, training software engineering interviewing sites. I look at the questions and I'm just like, these questions are tough, they are difficult, but I can do them, but they don't really reflect what's actually going on, like real life, like real hands-on. So when I see the interview question, I'm just like, I can't solve this, but I know how to, you know, something, make a product that works. Yeah.
And going back a little bit, I'm curious. So when you started, you said you, from the start, you knew you wanted to study software engineering. And for a lot of people, that is not the case. So I just found that very fascinating. What made you so interested in software engineering from the start?
I really can't. I guess I've just always loved computers. I'm that kid in the house who always played with all the phones, played all the video games, you know, around the house, you know, tried to experiment, you know, on everything that was technology. You know, having a computer growing up definitely helped. Or is it a desktop, you know, in the house, definitely helped with that. So I just wanted to figure out how things worked. So like, what happens, and not like in a hardware kind of way where I was opening up the devices, but more like the software. Okay, what happens when I do this? If I put a pin to this, what happens? How can I forget if I, you know, like, just doing those things sort of sparked, like, obviously, like as you continue to grow, you get like different things. I really can't pick the point where I said, okay, I want to do software engineering, but I knew there was a time where I was like, okay, I want to make websites. So, and obviously I have come to realize that making a website is not the same thing as making a software, but it does, you know, making a software is obviously more like a deeper, because you're making things that people will actually use, interact with, you know, it's definitely more beneficial to people.
So going off the back of one of your statements, you said you look at interview questions and you're like, I don't know what you're asking, but I know how to build something.
Yeah.
So what does a typical day in your role in your life look like?
Okay, so I'm going to explain how it looked like before. So how it looked like before was you get into work, and you know, coffee, you know, you sit down at the desk, there's a task that has been assigned for to you by someone, and then, you know, probably like
sorry, who is this someone?
Who is this mysterious person?
You need to know this person assigning duties.
So but it's like you're in a team, so there's a task that's assigned to you by a task assigned by another developer who is also, I'll call him a lead developer now. So he's the one that's going to assign the task, and then I'll be like, okay. So he's going to explain the task. We'll get on a call in the morning, and then he's going to explain. So I need you to probably add some more functional, some more like buttons or more inputs on this place, because I was working on a back end system. That's when I say back-end. When I say back end system, yes. I mean a system that is being used. For example, if you go to a bank, they have a system where they enter their, you know, information, like, okay, when we withdraw, when you want to withdraw, there's a system they are using, there's a software they are using there. So that's a back-end system, because you don't get to see it as a customer. It's only the bank that sees it. So think of it something like that. I was working on something like that. So they'll be like, okay, yeah, we need more, you know, inputs for this. We need a map for that. And then, you know, you go ahead and then I would try to solve it. And then, you know, end of day, you know, tell the guy, this is what I have done, commit my changes. And, you know, he's going to be like, okay, we'll review it tomorrow. And then, you know, that was how the cycle was. When it's done, pick up another task. But right now, it's a bit different right now. So it's more like deeper into the software engineering role. So usually in every day or every morning, we have something called the daily stand-up. Or is it daily huddle? That's a time where we all come together for like 10 to 15 minutes. We just tell each other, update each other what we are doing. So on the task we did yesterday, on the task we are about to work on, if we are blocked in any way. And then, yeah, once that's done.
When you say blocked, what do you mean? Sorry.
Okay. When I say blocked, I mean maybe as you're working on a task, you need something from somebody. Or you don't know what to do on that task anymore. Maybe you're lost. Mm. So you just be like, okay, I'm lost on this. I need help, you know, and all that. And then that's what it involves. And then it also involves, after that meeting, you know, you get on, you start doing your task.
Who's at this meeting? I'm intrigued. So you're a software engineer. It sounds like there's a senior software engineer or senior developer. Who else is in the team?
Okay, so in the team, there's usually a lead software engineer. They call the team lead. Then there are other developers as well, software developers, who would also be senior or junior. It doesn't matter. And then there's also a project manager. That is, or project owner, if you want to call that. That's the person who is supervising the project, who owns the product. Then
is that person also a developer, or are they like different background? No,
the person is not the developer. The person is like the client, for example.
Okay, so they're not,
for example, they are technical. They are not usually the client, but they could be the product manager. That means they're the ones that are going to manage the product to see mm-hmm. it meets with the client's, you know, requirement, for example.
Don't worry, guys. We're going to get a product manager, so we'll understand what that actually means.
Yeah. So we have them also in the meeting. They are usually not technical people, but if they are technical, it makes the team, you know, very much better. We also have a designer in the team, which is the person who has designed the web pages, or the designs or the logos, and then we have that in the team as well. And then, yeah, we do that. We tell each other what we are doing. So it's like a team. We just have to keep communicating.
That's cool. I just wanted to get like a picture. In my mind, you said stand-up. So I was, okay, there's people in there. Who else is in the room? And sorry, just to pick your brains a little bit, another conversation Oyin and I have been having, you just said technical and non-technical. What does that mean for you?
For me... someone
I think someone, we tried to define it in our intro episode.
For me,
love to hear your take.
For me, like, a technical person is one who knows how to code and can understand the technical jargon. So if I'm talking about, oh, the database queries are a bit too slow, we need to optimize that. And then usually the product manager doesn't care. He's just like, does it work or not? You know? So yeah, that's the difference.
Okay. Yeah. I don't mind the definition, but I'm going to be extremely picky. I'm putting myself in the mindset of a listener. You just used the word technical to describe technical. You said someone who understands technical jargon. I need to question this witness. Please break it down.
Yes.
So that's why we use the word technical anyway. So basically
do you know we had this conversation. We were like, everyone has different meanings.
Okay, so basically if you understand how to code and understand the fundamentals of programming, I will call you a technical person in those kind of discussions. But there's also what I like to call business, which is there are some people who understand the business side of things only. And I'll just use an example because I guess it's going to help. So, for example, Elon Musk is he builds PayPal, right? So he's definitely technical in his in how he operates his business in some way. Because when I say technical, because he has some knowledge.
He co-founded. Did he build it? Like, did he
part of the program and whatever.
Elon makes big claims, man. I don't know. He makes big claims.
I'm just like, it's a random example. Or Mark Zuckerberg, for example.
No, yeah, I get what you saying. Sorry, I just got distracted by the mention of Elon Musk.
or those guys, like those guys are technical in their approach. So, and someone who is not technical, I don't know, maybe like the manager of a football club or something. Like, he's probably not a programmer, so he's not going to understand why the jerseys are not being sold out on the mobile application. Enough, you know, very random example. You get it.
Okay, this is really interesting. I think we should have asked our other guests what technical versus non-technical is for them, because I feel like Michael's answer was so heavily influenced by the fact that he's a software guy.
Yeah.
You just said if you don't know code, you're not technical.
Yep.
And to be fair, if you ask someone else in a different field, maybe someone who's like a law person.
Yeah.
Technical for them is like someone who understands like the technicalities of law.
So it's
you have to use the same word technical, so it doesn't count.
Yeah. And whereas like for me, I'm in a very technology oriented role. So for me, technical is I feel like it's about the detail. It's like, to what level of detail about X subject are you informed? So if you look at like IT systems or like technology, how much do you know about UX, UI design? If you know a lot, you're very technical, in my opinion. If you know a lot about cloud computing, software engineering, like to the level where you can build stuff, then you're very technical. If you know a higher level amount of detail, then I feel like you're non-technical. I think that's the definition I've settled on within my... I hope that's what I said in the first episode. Otherwise, I've just contradicted myself.
I can't remember.
I can't remember what I said. Well... I
think in my like, I will probably just define it better now because I've had some time to think.
No, I understand. So we put you on the spot.
It's like there are different kinds of people. So is that if you're working on software, like if you're actually hands-on or you know how to be hands-on, then I'll consider you technical. But if you are just working in the software team, like you're never hands-on, you're just, you know, you're not touching anything, I'll consider you non-technical. That's been, yeah.
I think that's
right. I think I understand what you mean now. So what you're saying is that within that tech system, within the software development,
whatever
ecosystem,
world you're in,
whatever, like the person who is like who has a lot of hands-on experience with the system that we're actually building, as opposed to those who are more, I guess you can say, more supporting roles.
Like, or they interact with it, but not necessarily.
Not hands-on as much.
They mostly interact with outsiders, with the clients or customers.
That makes sense.
No, she did well, because that's not actually on our usual question list. So sorry for springing that on you, but you reacted to that very well.
It's all right.
We've talked about it, some of it partially, is in terms of software engineering, software development. But generally speaking, what would you say is like the biggest misconception about software engineering that you've heard or had something that when you hear it just really annoys you, or there's like your pet peeve or something?
I'm trying to
rant.
Yeah, this is the opportunity to get it off your chest.
Yeah. Speak now.
This is a safe space.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. My biggest, okay, not biggest, but one of the challenges that I've got is the fact, but people think that they need to know how to do everything at the beginning. And they think they need to know all the languages. So it's more like people don't focus on learning the concepts.
Sorry, when you say languages, do you mean Spanish and Mandarin?
No, I don't mean, I mean programming language. When I mean programming language, you know, for example, JavaScript, Python, C#, Java, and so on. So
sorry, another level below. What is a programmer? Like, what is that? That doesn't mean anything to me. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, what's so a programming language?
A program, you guys are just giving me like, it seems like I am.
It's like I'm explaining to us like we are five.
Okay, all right. Okay, so a programming language is basically a code, a language that you write in. I'm using the word language again, but just pardon me. It's basically what you write in, is a programming language, type of language you write in, and then the computer is going to compile it.
Oh, okay. So it's a computer
understandable, you know, language. So yeah, my biggest, you know, one of my pet peeves is that people think they need to know the languages itself. Meanwhile, learning a language is much easier than learning English, but that, don't focus on that. Like I prefer people to focus on the concepts and the, you know, and all those, the major things, like the basic things. And then that was going to help you in any language or any, you know, area that we go to. And yeah, and then the another thing is that people think software.
Sorry. Yeah. Before you go on to the next thing, so let me be sure I understand you. So what you're saying is people who are just getting into software engineering shouldn't get too bogged by, I want to learn all these languages. So they need to understand the basic concepts. So when they understand those basic concepts, they can then apply it to all the different languages they want to learn.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah, you absolutely. You just round. Very correct. Yeah.
Okay. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
So, I mean, and another one is, let me try to remember.
Is it possible? So actually, you just triggered a question. Is it possible to learn all the languages? How many languages are there? How many programming languages are there?
I have no idea because new ones keep springing up.
Yeah.
So it's basically like there's no point. Like you're playing whack-a-mole. As soon as you learn one, another one pops up.
I mean, usually they are languages that are high in demand.
Mm.
And they are languages that are useful for different like thing. For example, if you make websites or web facing. You have to use JavaScript. You have to know some JavaScript.
All right. So would your advice be kind of pick what you want to learn in terms of like, do you want to learn how to make websites or apps or build different things? And then pick a language within that environment and then learn that, or learn everything for websites, for example.
As an advice, I wouldn't advise anybody to pick something at first. Like I said, like learn how to program first.
You wouldn't even say start with webs. Like websites are still too narrow. Just learn about programming as a concept.
Program, yeah. But of course, if it means you learning making a website, it's fine. It doesn't matter. But learn how to program, because that knowledge is transferable everywhere. Like, even if you want to make mobile applications, for example, because you know JavaScript, you can learn that. If you know Java, you can write C#. You know,
I was going to ask, are they different, or is there like commonalities between the languages?
Between the languages, they have, like I said, they have concepts. There's logic. You know, they have concepts. So the concepts include, you know, there's something. There are conditionals. That's if this is true, do this, else do that. Like that's the same thing in all languages. They have, you know, summation, addition, you know, they have loops. That means keep doing this until this happens, you know, all the languages. I mean, just little things that are different in the languages. So basically just pick one. But like you also said, like what you were talking about, if you know the field you're trying to go into, for example, if you are going to websites, you should definitely learn some JavaScript. If you are going into some scripting, or you know, to go with Python, you know, if you're trying to do data analytics, data and all that, you know, learn some R or Python. If you're trying to do some game design or all this, you know, go C++. Or if you're trying to mobile application, go Kotlin, or you know, in that direction anyway, you definitely figure it out.
And you mentioned something about logic, like knowing logic. And just like a question from that is, do I need to be very good at maths to be able to become a software developer?
I don't think it's good at math. I think it good at solving problems or if you like solving. And those are two different things, because I know that I am not very good at math. I probably do 6 times 2 on the calculator. Yeah. But it's more like be good at problem solving. That is, see a problem and try to understand it. I think one thing that really helped is like word problems, like, because a client is going to come to you and tell you, hey, I have a problem. I need to reduce the amount of people who leave my website. You know, I want them, I want more subscribers. That's the problem. Now, programmer, solve it. You know, that's not a math problem. But yeah, it's a numbers problem, because you need to know if the numbers have increased or not. But, you know, do something about that. So, yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
So you said some things around, like, for websites, you need this. For data, you need this. For applications, you need this. How, what kind of learning paths are there that are available? It seems like there's a lot of different things, a lot of different options you can go for. How would you recommend someone like learn, for example, how to become a website developer? Are there resources out there you'd recommend, or like online training or in person?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I say this and I say it all the time. If you want to start like programming, I would advise to go through HTML, which is basically, it means hypertext markup language, is basically what we use on websites. I would advise you to go through that and understand how the structure works. I would advise to go and learn JavaScript, because JavaScript is an easy language to learn, and you kind of get to see what you're learning in that aspect. But once you are done with that, I would advise you to, like, okay, now you're done learning how to program and you know the concepts. Now choose what direction you're trying to go to. So I can't remember your question anyway. But
so where would I go to learn about HTML and JavaScript?
If you're going to learn about all those, I would recommend, like, go to this site I use, freecodecamp.org. That was the site I used, like, while also in uni. Watched lots of their YouTube videos. They have a YouTube channel. And, you know, that was just part of the learning curve. But, and also another thing, like, build something while you're learning. Don't just learn and follow along. Like, try and take some time out. Also, there are some Udemy courses you can get as well. I don't know their names, but Free Code Camp is free, and that's why I'm plugging them.
Yeah. Nice. We like free. Free is good.
There's also another site, W3 Schools. I think they have good content there, but it's just like read text. It's not really a tutorial or anything like that. Maybe they have now, but I don't know.
Cool. And speaking of learning paths, so for you, you started by, you know, doing like a tech related course, your undergrad. But for someone who doesn't have a background with maybe a CS degree or a tech degree, can they still become a software developer, and how, if possible?
Well, yeah, they can be. And, you know, there are all sorts of, like I said, you can go through self-learning, you know, Free Code Camp, watch YouTube videos. There, if you want, you can attend some boot camps. I don't know of any, but there are boot camps that people do around where they like teach you how to be a programmer in 3 months or 6 months or any, whatever short time that they do. But one thing is for sure is that from my experience, you can't compare people who, or you can, especially at initial stages, people who went through boot camps and people who went through 4 years of uni. Like, sometimes the people who went through uni have like foundational knowledge, and then they're going to speak to you on, allow me to use the word, technical terms.
You can use it now. We've defined it. It's fine.
Yeah. They're going to speak to you like in terms that you'll be like, you'll be able to speak in terms and understand each other more, like easier at the beginning. But after you do your bootcamp, after like a few years, maybe 3-4 years, you are just on the same level. You have spent those years learning those technical jargon. And, you know, That's,
I think I get what you mean. It's like the boot camp teaches you a very specialized skill set. It's like you now know how to build websites, but the wider context, like when you said at the start with your degree, they taught you about servers, they taught you about cloud security. So you have like the wider technology landscape knowledge that they may not have. And I think that's a good point for you to raise, because I think whilst the boot camps and like self-paced learning can give you those skills, I think it's a good idea to like study wider around like what is a like data center, what is the cloud, what is a server, just to, like you said, make sure that, because all of those things come up, like people throw around terms all the time, like database, SQL, Python. And if you don't have the wider context, you will be lost like 40 to 50% of the time, especially if you're working in a more technical role. So yeah, I think that's a really good thing that you brought up.
The it shouldn't matter if you, as long as you're ready to keep learning.
I don't think it will stop you from doing your job. It might just be like a conversational thing. So like when people are talking more widely about a project or like a problem, you might just, it's like if you're nearly fluent in a language, you catch most of the words, but then there's a word you're like, oh, what did that mean? Like, and then you need to look it up. So
You get it. Yeah.
You touched on it earlier a little bit, but can you give us an idea of what progression path looks like for like software engineers?
Sorry, what one?
Progression, the progression path or the career path.
Okay, career path. Okay. How it looks like. So first of all, you get in when you start, you're going to be a junior. I'm using a term called junior loosely, but usually you are a junior in the sense that you're going to start doing tutorials. So even after you get employed, you're going to do tutorials because you're going to have to learn.
That's cool.
Yeah. So basically, most companies that hire juniors, they still take them through tutorials. They still.
That's very nice. Yeah.
Because they have to make sure that the knowledge you have. It's more in foundational, plus they are using some new technologies in the company, so they need you to, you know how to do those things more or better. And
that's
then after good.
That's gentle. I like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, most companies should do that. So, okay. When that's done, you are still a junior for like, depending on how you know you work. So as a junior, you're the one that you just get handed tasks to do. So basically, you are just going to be like, okay, what do I do today? And then you get handed tasks, and then you do them. You are going to be mostly whatever you do is going to have to be checked by your teammates to make sure you're doing it properly. And then, that's basically how it is. And then when you do that for like, it's not like a year's amount of things, just like your involvement in the team. So to move to like a more mid role, you are going to be now more active in choosing the tasks to do for yourself and knowing which one is more important. You are going to be more active in the decision making of where to go in the team. You are going to be thinking about how long these tasks will take and this is slowing you down and all that. You know, you are going to be more involved in the team decision. And then once you, if you're going for like maybe like, I don't want to jump to senior, but because it seems as there's a space in between, but let's just say senior. senior is more like you are in charge of leading the team. So you're going to be caring for the team in not just do your tasks kind of thing, but you're going to be trying to ensure that your team members progress from junior to mid and from mid to senior as well. So you're going to be telling them the things they need to do. Hey, you need to speak up more in meetings. We need to hear your ideas. The senior is also the one now interacting with more with the business part of the team. He's more concerned about how this is too much work for the developers to do. You know, he's more concerned with estimation, you know, trying to make sure the product comes out at a good time and all that. So there's probably one more level, maybe like consultant or something, where it's just like, you know, just basically just checking that the team is going all fine and, you know, everything is. And those ones usually have like lots of years of experience. Mm. So basically, I think it all comes with years. You can't just jump to a senior within 6 months. It comes with years and with experience. Okay, I think one more thing I should have mentioned: a junior has just theoretical knowledge. He has never done anything in his life, but he just knows how to do things and has lots of theories and how and best practices and all that. But then, as you begin to grow, you realize that some of those best practices are not practical. Mm. They don't really work in real life. You know? And then the more you grow, you just realize, yeah, the theory is good, but you need more experience to actually solve it. So, yeah, I think that's how it works. At first, you have lots of theory, and then as you begin to grow, you have more experience and balances out properly. Yep.
Very nice.
That's really helpful. Yeah, the way you've broken it down.
Yeah, that's I love great. That. You made it sound like a family. So nice. Like, here, let me hold your hand, you little boy. And now you're a man and you can stand on your own 2 feet. It actually sounds very supportive in all seriousness. Yeah. I think it's quite nice. And it sounds like there's a lot of emphasis on you're not a junior. They don't want you to remain a junior. They want you to grow. And I think that's quite nice.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a junior, if you're a junior, it's very bad for the team because you have to be hand-holding. You know, we need someone to, you know, take responsibility and not be scared, you know. So that's why
that's good. If you're an ambitious person, then like it sounds like a good career path to go after, because if you're willing to like put in the work and like learn from other people, then mm-hmm. they will help like pull you up as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
And speaking of, you were saying that, you know, we were talking about not being scared and all that, and it made me think about just like for a junior person and even just like someone who's like in the mid level, do you ever, and I don't know what level you are at this point, but even just like generally as an engineer, yeah, software engineer, using or building a product that many people use, do you ever get to a point where you're just like scared that you're going to break stuff?
So, that's a good question.
For me, it's different because when you start it, depends on when you come into a project. So usually when you come into a project, you are going to be scared. It doesn't matter because you don't want to spoil what has already been live. You know, that has already been used by millions of people or thousands of people, depending on the case. So I have learned to overcome that fear by being a senior in other projects as well. So like I can have like personal projects that I do which allow me move code from you know, from development all the way to production. So it's actually my own project that is now live, so I know how to interact with a live project. So that's how I have overcome that fear of breaking something. But you know, once you join a new project, you're obviously going to be afraid. Like, that's why we have a process called review, where everybody checks what you're doing. So you don't just go in blindly. So that fear is still reduced in that way. So yeah, it's okay to be afraid. It's fine.
See, I told you guys, it's a family. You guys are giving me family vibes. It's very cute.
Yeah. Make me
Is it as nice as you'll describe it? Because I'm feeling warm right now. I'm like, oh, look at all this support. Like...
Well, yeah, that's it. Like, usually it's not a competition mostly, because you are joining a team. So, I mean, you are not trying to be better, the best developer, because we need everybody to be at the top game for software to be good.
Nice, yeah. I like it.
Okay, so let's talk about everyone's favorite part of the show. Let's talk about money.
Yeah. So,
So can you tell us what anyone who's going into your field as a software engineer mm-hmm. should expect to earn, and just talk us through like every of those stages, what the range looks like in terms of expectations?
I'm not going to put a figure to it, but I'm going to do it based on on what they call it now, on your location, because it does matter if you're in America, if you're working remote, if you're, you know, but I'm just going to be like, based on your location, usually when you start off, you are sort of a liability to the company, because you're being trained and they're not really sure if they should pay you that amount of money. And it also depends on the companies, how much the company can give. If you're employed in Facebook is different from if you're employed in, I don't know, eBay or something. It's very different. So based on that, like...
Did you just diss eBay?
No, I was just saying, for example, I'm not dissing.
Wait, I'm sorry for the lag there. I'm like, eBay is a big...
No? Yeah, they're big, but Facebook is bigger.
Not as big as Facebook.
Okay, wow, see, no, big tech just flexing on everyone. Because I'm like, eBay is a big e-commerce platform, you know.
I just thought of anyone, but you know, like, there's a difference, you know, in size.
Yeah. No, I get you. I'm just kidding. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm going to just say, like, once you start, it's more like minimum pay or basic salary, depending on your location. You know, you should
ask
around.
Are you serious? Why do I find that hard to believe?
You should ask around, because you can check out this site, Glassdoor or something. They have like...
Shout out to Glassdoor. Use that before your interviews.
Yeah, so they have like a way of, you know, defining salaries that you can, you know, check the range as well. And obviously, as you begin to progress in your career, you begin to be worth more to your company, and your knowledge and your experience become more valuable. So that's when you need to ask for more, you know, for more salary as to go forward.
Wait,
so
hold on. Sorry. No. No, we're not doing that. Give us, please, a range for junior dev. Okay. You're in Europe. All right. Give us a range for Europe. Give us a range for North America. And then give us a range for a country of your choice. Because as you said, minimum wage, I thought minimum wage to you might be significantly different to minimum wage to someone else.
Yeah, obviously. Okay, so let's say, for example, if you're in Europe, you can get like around close to 50K.
See, this is why you have to ask the people questions. What do you mean minimum wage?
Okay, so I can get like,
really,
okay,
just
I can get like
50K is minimum wage.
5K, yeah.
that's oh my goodness.
Is that 50K
euros, right?
Depending on your location, like for euros or pounds.
After tax.
I don't know about the tax.
Let's
say before tax, obviously. So
this man said minimum wage. Yeah. Oh, and my goodness. I'm sorry, I'm stunned.
I guess I should not put a number.
What
yeah,
country do you live in? That, I need to move to wherever you are, because your minimum wage is banging.
Wow. Guys, disclaimer, this is not about me.
This is, yes, of course. This is not about him.
This is
not about
a general information.
Yes. Aggregated figures.
Disclaimer.
These figures are aggregated. They're not a reflection of Michael or his lifestyle or his earnings.
Yeah.
Disclaimer.
Good disclaimer, Tammy.
Yeah, so
thank you. I tried.
And then, you know, as you begin to grow up, you know, move up in the chain, and if you're working at a bigger company, you definitely have, you know, you're gonna get more. You know, you can sometimes it goes to like 100K.
Is that like mid
like,
developer?
Not depending on mid. I don't want to say depending on mid, because people can go to a startup company and be demanding 100K. Like, that doesn't work, right? You know, it depends on where you are.
I think that's a good point, yeah.
You know, like, it should grow up. It should increase, like, basically, like, in whichever other role we have. So sometimes it goes up to 100K or even 160K or sometimes even up to 300K. I don't know, but, you know, some devs that are managing, like, really, really lots of software, like huge software, and depends on the income of the company as well.
So would that be like a consultant? I know you don't want to do like direct comparison, but that would be like a very experienced developer.
Yeah, basically. And these numbers, I'm just like thinking about them off the cuff. I didn't.
No, of course. No, yeah, I've understood.
Or they'll give you a better explanation of, even in your area, like you can find a good salary range in your area as well.
Mm.
Yeah. So.
No, I mean, what I've heard so far is that software development / engineering is the career path if you're looking for money.
Yep.
I mean, I usually, you are the tech bros. I usually don't like to tell like people to go into, you know, career of because of money, because you get disappointed when you don't get paid.
That's a good point.
Or yeah. you think that the money is sort of
there free. Are a lot of variables. You're right. You're very right, because it depends on. You can be in the same role as someone else and earn half the amount they do. You're still making a good amount of money, but it can be that variable. So, yeah, I think that's a very good point to make.
Yeah. And, you know, people, when they, because of sometimes the companies, if you demand too high a salary, the companies will run out because they're not making much profit. And then they have to lay off people.
Mm. And
that can be very devastating. So,
yeah, that's interesting. We had a conversation about layoffs mm-hmm. early on in the show in our intro.
Mm-hmm.
So when a company's I guess overhead is more than what they actually earn.
What's overhead, please?
I don't know. Terry, I'm not the one.
No, we have to be examples here.
I guess overhead is like
your
expenses,
cost, right?
things you're spending on, and so salary is one of those things. So if you're, like, you're spending a lot on salary and like you're not earning as much, or the income, you know, doesn't match what you're actually spending, then layoffs are happening. So yeah, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, and just for the listeners, I just went on Glassdoor and typed in junior software engineer in my area, and the variety, the variance is huge. So yeah, Michael is right. Don't pick a figure and like stick in your head with it. Go with passion. And to be honest, I feel like in tech, eventually the money will come as you get more skilled. But yeah, there's a wide variance in the salaries. So yeah, keep that in mind. So you have shown us today, Michael, that you're a very passionate man around about software engineering and how things work. And I'm so happy you're getting to live your dreams.
Yeah, thank
you. But is there anything that you're really excited about when it comes to like the future of software engineering, or we will allow you more widely technology in general?
I think what's currently interesting right now is I'm seeing programmers are trying to put themselves out of business.
I know where you're about to go with this.
Yeah, they're making AI to write.
Yes. I'm so happy you mentioned it, because I've been playing with ChatGPT all week. I don't think anyone from my workplace will listen to this. I've been trying to find ways to make my job easier with ChatGPT. So I'm trying to see ways I can remove the boring tasks and feed it to ChatGPT as well. Oh, so you think it could come for your jobs?
No. I don't think it would. I think it will come for most developers' jobs. That's basically...
Michael said, not me, but you guys be safe.
It's going to come for most entry developers' jobs, because those are the basic things that every developer should know how to do. And what I'm going to say again is, like, software engineering as a whole is basically taking like what the client wants and making it into a product, which is software. So unless we get to a point where clients are able to define exactly what they want, the first rule of software engineering is this: clients don't know what they want.
So you feel like that interpretation piece is going to, and some, yeah, I agree, it's going to be very difficult for AI to be able to like.
Yeah, so, except, I mean, we may have, and people's clients' needs are very, very specific. For example, someone can say, oh, I want a website. And then you'd be like, okay, slow down. What exactly are you trying to do? I'm like, you know, I have a business and I want to be able to sell my business, my items on that website. They were like, okay, no, that's not a website. You want an online store. You know, that's where the quizzing comes in of software engineering. And then definitely an AI, if you tell an AI, I want a website, it's going to give you, for example, a website. And then you have to start defining the little things you want, and the AI probably will get mad at you. if it's intelligent enough, it's good. But
So are you excited, or are you scared? Are you annoyed with, or do you have mixed feelings? What are your feelings?
I guess I'm just like excited to see how far it will go before they drop it. I'm just trying to see how far they will go.
You think it will be dropped?
Yeah, that's what I think. And it's
interesting. Just I've not heard that take.
Yeah,
interesting.
This is what I think, because I see it just like because there was a long time ago there was a product called WordPress. WordPress usually helped people make sites like really quickly, and in fact, it powers like maybe 60% of the internet today. Perhaps it took devs out of jobs, but it created more opportunities for devs to basically make custom WordPress plugins. So in that, I'm using that as an example because that's the closest example that we have got to something like that. So maybe if this ChatGPT is going to make more developers, or what do you call it, take most of developer jobs, but it's going to also create other ones, you know, maybe it's a maintainer for that thing, or someone who is able to talk properly to the AI, you know, and make it do the correct things or type properly, you know. So that's what I'm excited to see, actually. I'm actually excited to see that. So it can't really take away programmers' jobs. I think that's one thing I stand firm with. You can't really take away programmers' jobs.
Because it's even programmers that are making the challenges in the first place. So
I mean, after a few years, it's going to become a normal thing. And
yeah.
Just another.
I think it will span new industries or use cases, just like the internet did. At first, people thought, internet is going to kill journalism and this and that. But like, people just pivot and learn new skills and so on.
Yeah.
But what do you think? Because right now, we still haven't achieved what is termed like general intelligence. Would that be a different ball game for you in terms of, then would you be worried? Because then potentially that is an entity that could like mimic a software engineer to a client, for example, if you wanted to productify it.
Well, that's a good point, but
I mean, we're a long way away, but yeah.
I see like software engineering as very, very much complex, and it's more about human interaction. It's more human interaction than coding, in my opinion.
Look at you, Oren, you're everywhere.
I know.
She just smiles every time someone mentions interaction or human computer. She's just like, yeah, that's
sweet. I mean, I feel it's more humans that are talking. Because like I said, like I start the day off with meetings. We have meetings as well during the day. Meetings during the day as well, and you know,
there's a lot of communication and like human aspect. Yeah, it's not just the coding. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, what do you think about ChatGPT? Have you tried it out?
I have not. I have been spending more time trying to look at the digital arts AI art.
Oh, okay. That one you have to pay for, so I'm not interested.
I tried it. I was trying to do it, and then I said I had to pay. So I've been trying to see if there's like a free version of it. But anyway, I'm actually excited about it, I think, because it actually makes, like Michael said, it actually has, like, there are a lot of use cases that will come out of it, and it's actually going to make people's job easier. Mm-hmm. So all the things that need to be automated, I think it's going to make it easier for people to just automate those things.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's going to be a lot of debate around if people who actually understand software, giving them access to these things, if they can actually manage things, and about like learning how to ask the right questions. Like if you don't know some type of code, or if you don't understand it in some way,
mm-hmm.
you can't really use it. as you know, as much. So you need to know something about what it's able to use it really well.
It was interesting. I saw one of my colleagues shared with me, there's already a website for the like visual artist AI thing, mm-hmm. where they're selling, it's like a prompt marketplace. Mm. So they will sell you a file so that you put in exactly the right thing to trigger like planets or minerals or celebrities, American presidents in space, like really random wacky things. Like, you're right. And if you didn't really know how to interact with that machine learning algorithm, you wouldn't really know how to get those outputs. So it's like, I completely agree. I think different industries, different creative like applications will come out of it. And I can't wait.
And you also
Over manual stuff. There's stuff I do at work, and I'm just like, why?
Yeah, I know. Like, let's get something else so I can focus on the more
exactly
problem-solving, strategic things that are more useful. And so, for example, right now, you know, a lot of developers, when they are working, they have to like go on Stack Overflow and ask questions. So mm-hmm. if you can just go on ChatGPT mm-hmm. and do that. And make your work easier. I mean, why not? So yeah.
Well, that's assuming that the what you're trying to do is easy to explain to ChatGPT, because basically what programming is this, like, we are basically trying to translate what we want into code. So the task actually is knowing what you want.
Exactly.
So if any developer knows what he wants to do and he uses ChatGPT, then sure, he's gonna get, you know, the code for that. But why not just code, since you already know it?
I think this is one of, you guys have just like triggered a thought process. This is one of the key kind of problems that we solve in technology. It's not always like the technical solutions may not always be that complicated, but it's taking like a thought, an idea, a request, and turning it into a solution.
Yeah,
and a lot of the time you do have to work a lot with your clients and iterate, like, why, what exactly do you want?
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to articulate that sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that sometimes is like 50% of the work, right? And it's like, clients might say, oh, so people were like, oh, it's the death of consultants. And I'm like, not really, because like so much of consulting is about helping the client understand exactly what they want. And right now, ChatGPT can't help you with that. It can only help you as much as you can help it, really. But yeah, it's interesting stuff. What do you guys think about how do we deal with intellectual property with AI generated things? So, for example, if I prompt that, I don't know, what's the visual AI thing called?
I can't remember the name as well.
If I prompt it to give me an output of the most beautiful galaxy you've ever seen, and no one else thought to do that, am I the owner of that artwork, or is AI? So this is something I'm really interested in, like, for the more creative side of things, mm-hmm. how much will we be able to claim ownership of AI generated X songs, art, I don't know, poems, whatever?
I'm pretty sure that we may not be able to do that as well, but perhaps we will, because most of the songs, most of the, you know, what they call it, beats that we make, they're also generated by, you know, machine as well. So it's just the right proper combination belongs to whoever combined it. You know?
It's really interesting. I think there's a whole subset. I think there's going to be like a whole AI. There's already like AI ethics.
Ethical. I was going to say that ethical AI is a budding research field.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of like questions, ethical questions, philosophical questions that are coming out from just like AI and how people are interacting with this. It's very interesting.
I think something about software engineering is that it's very different from like medicine. Very different from most other fields, because as a software engineer, you don't have a profession. Like, you don't promise to abide by the ethics of the law and promise to produce software that is good and sorted without fault. Like, if you're working in pharmacy, you have to make sure your drugs have no side effects and no bugs. When I say bugs, I mean unintended. Yeah. But if you're working as a software engineer or in software engineering, you have the tendency, you can do that. You can basically release very, very, very rubbish software that is very insecure, that can be, you know, that can be hacked. You didn't think about all possibilities, but you can release it and nobody's going to hold you accountable for it. So yeah, based on the talks coming on the air now, it's definitely needed, but it's probably 50 years too late. We never talked about who is allowed to program. Why are they programming? You know, that's why we have like dark web and, you know, many, you know, hackers and all things going. Yeah.
I saw this game, like this thing on Twitter, where a game developer was coming up with a game where if you die in that game, you die in real life. And I was like, oh my God, this is the apocalypse. Of course, he didn't do it. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, if someone is not held accountable for the things that they are creating, or if there's no, like you said, no policy, no guiding principle for what we're doing, then eventually we'll cause harm. And I think that's something that we all need to be thinking more about.
Yeah,
it's really interesting. Like we said, right, it's like full circle moment. At the start of the show, we're talking about what's technical versus non-technical. And I think this is a conversation Oren and I had at the start. Both sides are needed completely, because you have like the underlying technical aspects, but then you need the bigger level thinking sometimes as well, and people further away from the detail to help support that underlying technical knowledge or implementation, whatever it may be. Yeah. I think we've come to the end of the episode.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Michael. That was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Great episode, if I must say so myself.
No, it's Michael that's supposed to say so himself.
I mean, as a part of the episode, obviously it was right. Because of Michael. I'm not saying of because course. Of me. I meant because of Michael. I really enjoyed your insight. Thank you.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it too. You know, talking about software engineering, I'm very passionate about it. So having to, you know, be brought on to talk about it, really, you know, encouraging. You know. And I also like what you're doing as well. You know, getting people to talk about, you know, their careers and just break it down. You know, I really love that. And it's going to open like more space, you know, for people to get into tech and understand how it is like. So, yeah.
We hope so.
Yeah.
Well, that's been another episode in our Day in the Life series. We hope you've enjoyed it.
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Enjoy, and we'll see you next time.